Accession number 31425, Mr. Mick Gagan, Reel 14. So anything else happened while you were out? Any duties, or was it just training?
Well, a lot of it was duties, everything like that.
What kind of duties then?
Well, you had your guard duties, and also what was extra special out there, all round the camp, you wasn't just guarding the camp, they had a barbed wire fitted as well, because you got a lot of these Arabs, they'd sneak in and steal stuff. They'd take anything what was going. Even if you pulled up with a truck or that, you always see them, they all seem to pull around, but you had to keep your eyes everywhere. But in the town itself, in the small village itself at Homs, which was down to the beach and to the left, well, there was a lot of Italians lived there. There was about half a dozen small shops, all Italians, like selling food and do photos or anything like this. But what was very interesting, off the shore, there was a big boat had been sunk, and you could see the masts and the funnels, and it was a Dutch medical boat which had been sunk during the war, and the Italians were going out on boats, and I got to know a couple of them very well, and they'd go out with their diving, and they had the diving equipment with the big helmets, diving helmets and everything, and they was still going in that boat trying to find anything what they could. They'd got permission from the Libyan government to do all this as well, because the Italians, they were there during the war, before the war, and places like that, so they, a lot of them stayed, went back after the war finished and lived in the, because it was a free life for them and everything like that. There wasn't much vegetables or anything like that growing in this area, everyone seemed to survive.
You got on well with these Italians, did you?
Yeah, they was very good, and I went out with them a couple of times on the boat. It was only me, as far as I know, and went out and I used to watch them going down diving and everything like that. But what was very interesting for a lot of our lads as well, just along the coast road, a mile or so, there was the old Roman ruins which had been dug out in the 20s and 30s of Leptis Magna. That was the old Roman city of Leptis Magna, and that wasn't far down the road. And many times we'd even take fellas down there in a truck. The officers used to say, we'll go around, and the Roman ruins were very interesting, and it was a big area, and you spend hours down there, and you put your name in the visitor's book. There was nothing there, just the big Roman ruins, but one kind of a little building what you signed your name in before you went in. You wasn't allowed to touch nothing in there, but it was really interesting. And also along that coast, we used to go do a little bit of fishing, what we did, we got dispatch riders' glasses, painted them, pulled them tight so that they kept over your eyes and you wouldn't get no salt in them. And we used to use them and go swimming round in the coast, around the rocks and everything like that. And also we'd go, some of the Italians or the Arabs would go out catching octopus, and they used to bring up a hell of a lot of sponges as well. So it was things of interest at those days, because you had nothing to do. If you wasn't out on a scheme or something, you'd only be in the camp, which there was nowhere to go or anything. And this is why we got up the swimming party, so that there was no water to go bath, having showers or anything like that. And to keep the fellas clean, everyone, every day, would be down in that sea, in the salt water, and it really done them the world of good.
Now, anything else happened while you were there that you remember?
It was only a couple of trucks stolen and things like that. But it wasn't really, we had the brigadier come in, and there was one man had to go on guard. And me being an ex-infantry man, I felt very proud. I was put at the top of the steps to welcome the brigadier. And my colonel met him at the bottom of the steps, and they was coming up. It was like a to the officers' mess. And I was halfway up on the small platform. It was a nice concrete steps. I think they was about 12 foot wide. And the officers all come up behind him. And what I did, I slipped my magazine. I had a 303, pulled my magazine out just slightly, so that when I presented arms and I smashed my arm into the rifle, it went in and it clicked. And the brigadier, as he went past, I presented arms. Even the colonel was surprised, because, anyone over the rank of colonel, you get anyone up to the rank of colonel, you just salute, but to present arms as well. And he said, thank you, Gunner. And they walked past, and the old colonel afterwards, he had a word with me. He said, well done. But the colonel, he had married quarters, his wife come out, and the camp was here, and just across the road was a couple of small bungalows that had been built, and one was the colonel's bungalow, him and his wife. And he used to be there, watching, seeing everything. He was a really decent chap.
What did you think of it? Do you remember his name?
I can't think of his name now. I've got
good colonel.
Oh yeah, very good, excellent he was. And he was another man what would speak to the people. He'd perhaps coming into the camp, fellas that might be going out, going to have a swim or something, and all they'd have is a pair of shorts on and their towel under their arm. You didn't have to worry about going out with your caps and everything. You were just going swimming. And he'd always stop and speak to you. And he did know a hell of a lot of people by name, you know.
Anything else about Homs then?
No, it was just a desolate place and things like this. You'd hear all the donkeys of the Arabs going and things like this. But
And you were there about, 3 months till August?
Something like that, yeah.
51?
Yeah.
So what next?
Well, then I've got, I had a notice to say that I'm coming back to Britain. And
without the unit? You were drafted back?
Oh, yeah. The regiment was staying there, so you're just an individual. You're going to get posted back to Britain, and a few of them. I think there was about a dozen came, but they were all getting demobbed. They were conscripts. And a lot of them had got an extra 3 months as well because of the Korean War starting. And I knew that I wasn't coming back because I had an extra year put on. Any regular got an extra year put on your service because of the Korean War and all the other wars, what was going on at the same time. There was wars in the Middle East, the Canal Zone, that was getting a troubled spot. Trouble in Kenya, the Mau Mau were getting built up in Kenya, and also mostly in the Middle East, around the Aden place, there was a hell of a lot of trouble there, so they was keeping fellas in the army.
So what about the trip back home with the draft?
Well, it didn't take all that long. I think it took about a week. And we'd got on the boat and they didn't say you've got to do this and that. And we was just, more or less, you go on a parade in the morning, just a roll call and things like that. And then you go down and get all your kit going, make sure that all the decks are cleaned, everything like that, and you could go up and sit on the deck or anything. But when we come through the Bay of Biscay, it was really bad weather, and a lot of the fellas was sick and everything like that. and then we arrived back in England.
And any sort of reception, what do you remember about getting back? You've been away a long time.
Well, there's no reception, nothing like that. You just went through the customs and I think there was a truck to take us somewhere. We've put on a train and brought back to London. Then a truck met us in London and took us to Woolwich Barracks. And from there, they sorted you out, and some were going for demob, and they give me some leave. That was when my leave came up.
And this is August 51, you reckon?
Something like that, yeah.
And what do you remember of your leave?
Well, I come home and I think it was 28 days leave, and I didn't have much money. I'd been saving up while I was in Malaya, but I went and done a couple of weeks' work in the markets.
So you did the driving, your casual driving?
Yeah, and also I did some work on a building site. I did some labouring for about a week on a building site in Walthamstow here, not far away from my home. But those days you had to do it to get money, to help out, you know.
So what happened next? You went back to the Royal Artillery Base Depot at Woolwich.
Well, after me leave, I went back and they wanted me to... There was one officer who I knew, and he wanted me to stay in Woolwich as a physical training instructor. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. And
Why?
Well, in England, there was so much bull. You know, you're on parades here and there. And when you're away, you go on a parade, but you've got freedom and everything like this, which was very good. This is why I like being abroad, because you're not all the spit and polish what you got in England. And if you're in England, and I'd getting me extra year as well, put on. So I thought I'll volunteer for the Korean War. So I went to volunteer for the Korean War. I needn't have done, because if you've been abroad for 3 years, then for 6 months they can't send you abroad. But I volunteered to go abroad, and in the meantime I was helping out down in the gym and that in Woolwich. I used to take fellas for march them up to the medical. Different, all the recruits was coming in, and like, I wouldn't accept stripes again.
Now, why not?
I didn't want them. It was my attitude. I didn't want stripes. I could be, if I was a gunner, I was free. I didn't have to be here and there. If you're an NCO, you've got to be there. Where if you're not, I could be a bit of a freelance, and I was a bit awkward in those days. So, but I used to take people up to the... And what we used to do, there used to be the rail, the train, trams, coming down Shooter's Hill, down at Woolwich. And a lot of the fellas come from London. And I used to take them out, and perhaps you go and get inoculations and come back. But the next day, they got nothing on. There's nothing to do the next day. They'd just go be in the camp. And I used to put the board under my arm, march the squad out the door, go up the hill, and the first tram that come down to take you down to the by the station or the tunnel, we used to jump on that. Going past the camp, they'd all duck down, and then at the bottom we'd get off and we'd go out and come back on parade for the next day. And I used to come home like that. Everyone, as long as you've got a board under your arm and you're walking about, you was all right. And also in Woolwich, there used to be the Salvation Army. And you'd go there in the evening, and a lot of the fellows used to go...
The canteen, Salvation Army canteen.
Now, the Salvation Army, what used to happen, you go in there and you have a tea and cake or something like that, you know, and they might have a bit of hymn singing for a little while, and it was all jolly people. And you go in there, like, might have a little service, but after you know, you've got a tea and cake waiting for you. So, and it'll be packed out sometimes. more little atheists than anything, but they'd all be in the Salvation Army waiting for the tea and cake. You know, it was, in those days, you hadn't got what you got these days. All you had was practically a wireless. There was no televisions or nothing like that.
So how long were you at Woolwich this time? You got there about August.
Well, yeah, I got there, and then I came home, then I went back, and then I volunteered for the Korean War, which was, they didn't want me to go. And I got a friend in there. He was a sergeant. He was on the administration, and he fiddled it for me. He was Sergeant Alfie Taylor, and he come from Walthamstow, friend of mine, and we used to go back to Woolwich together, and he fiddled it, and at the beginning of December, I was going out to Korea.
Now, who are you going with, or what was happening?
I was going individual, because I'd volunteered, and there was no regiments or anything going there.
So which ship did you go out on?
I think it was the Devonshire. Went on the Devonshire as far as Singapore. And as soon as I got on that ship, I went and got myself a job in the cookhouse with the Merchant Navy. Because on the troop ships those days, you'd have a bit of rifle practice or anything like that if you was going back as a troops or something. And sometimes you get a regiment going or a platoon out of the regiment, things like this. But I was going individually, so, and being on so many troop ships, I'd been on many troop ships, I knew the little ins and outs. And as soon as I got on there, I got a job in the Merchant Navy, a mess in their galley. And I used to wear jeans and that of a day when I'm working in there. And also, I was sleeping down in the hold. My uniform and everything was down there in that hold, but I'd be working of a day, so I didn't have to even tell anyone where I was going. I might be up at 6 in the morning, where they could lay in till 7 on the boat, but I'd be up at 6 going in the galley and preparing breakfast for the Merchant Navy crew. And I really enjoyed it with them. And also, at the end of my trip, the Devonshire was going down to Australia, dropping all the troops off. That was going down to Australia, and they asked me if I wanted to go to Australia. I said, no, I'm in the army. And the chief cook, he came up and he shook me hand and everything, and he says to me, you'll be leaving in a couple of days' time. So I said, yeah, you know. He said, you know, we've really appreciated your work, but I was getting good food and everything on there. I could help myself.
Anything else about the voyage you remember?
Yeah, and what happened at the end of the trip, when I was getting off, he come up, and the chief cook and the chef who I'd been helping, and he said, here, he said, that is from the captain of the boat. And when I had done it, it was £20, and that was a hell of a lot of money those days. And, you know, so I'd earned a little wage. And then when I got on, we had to transfer to another ship.
Do you know what that was?
I can't think of that one. I can't think of that one. And we transferred to that, and it took us to Japan. We went through Hong Kong, things like that, from Singapore to Hong Kong. We went past the Naval Graveyard of ships in the China Sea. There were so many wrecks. And we was all at the side looking at that, and it was fantastic to see how many ships would have been wrecked over the course of the hundreds of years. And then we went there, went to Hong Kong. We wasn't allowed ashore there. They didn't allow us ashore. We was there for about 6 hours, picking people up, dropping people off. And then we went on to Kure in Japan. And that was where we...
So you get there about January 52?
I think it was the end of December.
Still December, right?
I think it was the end of the... Yeah, the end of December or January, somewhere around the Christmas time.
So December 51?
Yeah.
So what happened when you got to Kure then?
I'd left... when we got to Kure, we got taken, they give a roll call of everyone what should have been on there. There was a few hundred people, a few hundred soldiers. Some were going back, some were going to the regiments and other things. They got all different postings. Some had got postings in Japan and everything like that. And we had to go to JRBD. JRBD, that was in Hiro, H-I-R-O, just outside Kure, and JRBD stood for Japan Reinforcement Base Depot. That was where all the troops went before they went to Korea. And there was two camps mostly, one either side of the road, and there was Canadians in one camp, and we went into the other camp where we were going to get kitted out and everything.
And what were you kitted out with?
Well, it wasn't much to what we had already got. It was just because we had already got boots and gaiters and everything like that. When I say kitted out, a lot of them hadn't got that. A lot of them had come straight away from the Far East, and all they had was jungle greens and things like that. So they'd be kitted out like in a warmer equipment and everything. And we was also given like a white suit if you're out in the snow for camouflage. And I was there for, I think, for about 10 days.
Any training or anything else happening there?
Well, they just give you lectures and everything like this.
Now what were the lectures about?
About warfare and coordinations, and they take you out on up beyond, on the hills up behind the camp, more or less to get you fit. Because being on a boat, a lot of the people wasn't fit, you know, and not much exercise. So they take you out there for a few hours. It was more or less to pass the time away, to get you going, and it was quite a good camp and everything like that. But I didn't even know where I was going to when I even got to Korea. And when I got to Korea,
now how did you get to Korea?
We went on an old ship. It was a very small ship. And also on there was the Canadians, the canoe, we used to call them the canoes, the French Canadians. It was like an old barge, more or less, and you just slept where you could. There was no bunks or nothing like that. You just got your pack and your valise and everything like that. You'd put that down and you'd lay there, and you'd have a blanket, you know, always had a blanket with you to cover you over, and you'd sleep. And we got on there late at night, and we travelled all night, and it was a bit stormy, and we're laying on the deck, so you can imagine what we was like when we arrived in Pusan the next morning.
Cold. And that was January 52.
Yeah, cold and damp and everything like that, you know. And we landed in Pusan, and we had to go into the building because all your looking at your credentials and all your records and everything. And I was taken into this room, and there was a couple of officers there. And he said, "You're going to the 14th Field Regiment, Royal Artillery," which I did then, you know. And we got on a train to the nearest station up near the front, was called Tok Chon, T-O-K-C-H-O-N, Tok Chon.
And what do you remember about the train journey? Anything special?
Well, it was a very old train, full of, and all you're doing is just riding through miles and miles of devastation, because the Chinese and the North Koreans had come right the way down, so all it was devastation everywhere. And the train couldn't go too fast, and we was given a couple of sandwiches each before we got on there, and we got a good few hours journey. And when we did arrive there at Tok Chon, it was just like the end of the line. There was no buildings of that, only all old damaged buildings, a couple of huts what the Americans had put up. And we had to get out there, and waiting for us was a truck from the 14th Field. And I think there was about eight of us got on there, going to different units in the 14th Field. And I was posted to Baker Troop, 1st Blazer Battery, 1st Blazer Battery. And when I arrived there...
Anything about the lorry journey?
Well, the lorry journey, we had to come over the Imjim, and the...
So where were they? What they call the Koeng Sang area, or Samichon? Or?
No, it was just south. It was over by the Samichon area, Samichon. It was in that area. And we had to come over the... Pintail Bridge, and that was a wooden bridge which had been built by the American engineers. And when you got on that, you had to slow right down and go over so there was no vibration or anything, like you wasn't allowed to speed. And it was quite a nice solid bridge. And then coming up, all you're doing is coming up through unmade roads and everything like that. So it was a very bumpy journey until we got to the camp.
Did the camp have a name?
No. Well, we're saying a camp. It was only a big clearing where you put the guns in that area. So it wasn't a camp or nothing like that. It was just, all there was bunkers, and the guns was in amongst all the hills and things like that.